And welcome back into the Lunch Rush from Buffalo Wild Wings right here in Noonan, Georgia. Bojie Wood along for the ride with you. I want to thank Coach Max Howell for being with us a little bit earlier. Also, Coach Bill Jones talking a little SEC basketball. Let's move back into the college football realm right now. I'm going to bring in an old buddy of mine, Carter Cardwell, from up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Carter, here south of Atlanta, it is rainy and dreary as it has been all week. How are things up in Chattanooga?
Well, today, Bojie, our feet are a little dry today, but we had it earlier in the week. Of course, we had all the horrible stuff happen north of us up in the Cookeville area, and, you know, our thoughts are there. And, you know, I've got friends in coaching up there. We're going to have to go through some difficult things. But right now in Chattanooga, we're dry. We're good.
Good deal. Well, Carter, I was thinking when we were going to have you on the show, I was thinking back that it's hard to believe, but we've known each other, is it safe to say, over 35 years now?
I think you're accurate. I do believe it is over 35 years we've known each other. And, you know, like I said, a lot of good stories there.
Yes.
That we won't share on the air.
That's right.
We'll stick to recruiting.
Yes. If we had a private podcast sometime, we might be able to share those stories. And
exactly.
Although we need a couple of more people to die before we could tell them and not get in trouble, that would be.
We. You're exactly right. We'll just let that lay for today.
That's right. Well, of course, we go back to being GAs together at Auburn University back in the mid '80s. I don't know if we had met before then, but it seems like I've just always known you, and so always. No matter where we've gone, we've kind of stayed in touch with each other over the years, ended up
right.
Coaching against each other later on in our careers up in the and up. You were at Maryville. I was at Emory and Henry and Cumberland. So we ended up battling there. But, hey, listen, what I want to talk to you about today is to say recruiting is different. Let me preface this now. You're out of college football now, like I am.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
And then you're at Soddy Daisy High School, correct?
Correct. I'm at Soddy Daisy High School, just in the in Hamilton County. I left college athletics more than 10 years ago. My oldest son was starting high school football, and I just felt like it was the right time for me to make that transition back. But I started off in high school athletics, so to me it was just changing from one coaching position to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been in and out of college athletics and right back into high school. So for me it was an easy transition. And like I said, I've been in high school athletics for a while, but I've stayed involved with the college recruiting part of it for quite a while, sort of indirectly. I worked for Football University, or some people call it FBU.
Mm-hmm.
And for a couple of summers, I actually worked with FBU and in their what's called recruiting wing. Mm-hmm. As an evaluator. And I would go to their camps and evaluate talent for them and write reports on what I saw and what I thought, you know, players could bring out. I also went back and did some additional studies, and then at certain times while I was still involved in high school athletics, I was involved with the college recruiters that would come in, because of my college experience.
Mm-hmm.
Those high school administrators would say, well, you know what they're looking for, you know what they want, and stayed involved with it quite a bit. But like I said, right now, coaching high school football, enjoying the time.
Right, and of course, you and I have both coached and recruited at Division I, 1AA, or FCS, whatever it's called now, Division II and Division III and NAI. We've seen the gamut from top to bottom.
Right. I'd say between the two of us, we've seen just about every scenario you can come up with in college recruiting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, you mentioned you went back to high school when Jack was coming in and playing, starting, I guess, his freshman year, what have you, coming into high school. To play, you wanted to spend some time with him, be able to see him play. Of course, you couldn't do that as much as you would like if you were still in college athletics and recruiting. That's one of the reasons I stepped
right
away from college athletics early on to be able to raise my sons, and then got back into it after they both were up out of high school. But now, Carter, we were back then, and we worked hard at recruiting. But there were some natural breaks in recruiting back then. The way the recruiting calendar works now, I mean, according to friends of ours that are still in the business, there is no break. Is that what you're hearing?
There is no break. I think when you and I worked in it, there were small breaks, and there were different times. You know, you go back to the old expression, somebody said, you know, if you're not, it's like shaving. If you're not doing it every day, you look bad. But I do agree with you. There were ebbs and flows when you and I started in recruiting that were longer than now. You know, today it's a never ending cycle. It's at a different speed. It's at a different level. You know, for instance, when people recruited, when I first started recruiting, when you were recruiting, you had a region, you had an area, and pretty much that's where you worked. You worked that region to that area, and that's where you wanted to make sure you were strong. Today, it's a national thing. Mm-hmm. It's a natural thing. Even when I was at a Division III school, the University of the South, Sewanee, I was going to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I was heading to Texas. We had somebody going to Ohio. We had, you know, where in the past schools used to be what you would call regionally strong or regionally recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's a national thing.
Yeah.
Now, when I recruited at Virginia Military Institute, being in a military school, we had to spread our net a little wider at those times, sort of like the academies do today. You know, they spread wider. But everybody now is casting a national net. Because
mm-hmm.
I can remember talking about recruiting in different places, and you talked about, you know, your region or your area.
Right.
And, now I could dare say you could pull up Georgia, Auburn, and Alabama, you know, the area you're closest to right now. And of their 2020 signing class, I guarantee you there's somebody from Texas, there's somebody from California. And without really looking at the list, the scope now has gone national. And I remember when we were at Auburn, the discussion was, you know, who's going to get the most out of the Dixie Dozen?
Right, right.
You know, and that was sort of a measuring stick,
mm-hmm.
you know, or the Dynamite Dozen or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the national scale in recruiting has turned this thing into a year-round thing. You know, now there's camps. There were satellite camps. You know, now there's the one-day camp. You know, it has turned into a 365 deal.
Carter, when I was at Emory and Henry back in, I left Auburn, went to Emory and Henry 87, 88, and 89 for the first time, and the late, great Lou Wacker said something to me I'll always remember. You look at our roster at Emory and Henry back then, and it literally was 90% of kids from Virginia or the Northeast Tennessee area. We hardly ever got below Knoxville recruiting, and we did recruit all of Virginia because of the state grants that you could to get to go there. But I remember saying something to Lou after I got there, saying, "Hey, look, you know, I need to go recruit Atlanta." And he looked at me and he said, "Why?" He said, "Because to get from Atlanta to Emory, you got to pass a lot of schools." And that was his philosophy. But now you look at Emory's roster, and instead of being 90% Virginia and Northeast Tennessee, you're looking at probably about 50 to 60% of that roster. So it's filtered down to every single level.
It has gone to every level now, and like I said, it's on a national scale. And sometimes also when it used to be on a national scale, like I said, for the academies or the military schools, and sometimes it would be for some of the higher academic schools that would have to catch a, mm-hmm. you know, again, as I call it, cast a big net,
right?
You know, to go places.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, it has expanded that way. You could, when I coached at Maryville College, when we were rivals, you know, mm-hmm. it was the same thing. We were 90% or 85% of the roster was regionally strong, mm-hmm. you know, the area that you work with. And then I actually made the suggestion to my head coach when I was there that we go to Alabama.
Right.
And he basically said the same thing. He said, well, you can go to Alabama, just make sure you cover every school between your from Maryville to Alabama first.
That's right.
You know, you better stop, you better make a bunch of stops on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, you know, these schools are now reaching into different areas that they didn't used to. And like I said, it's at every level. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you can look at the, I'm sure, the, like I said, the signing list on those three big SEC powers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's more national diversity on there than there used to be.
Right. Now, Clark,
and that's just the way it is. It's changed that way. Of course, access to information is done that.
Right.
You know, that has helped.
Right. And, well, and that was going to be my next kind of segue into my next question for you. First, the observation is that, again, going back, not to sound like two grumpy old men or what have you, but going back when we were doing this, there were three ways that basically that you contacted kids. When we first started doing this, there were three ways. Number one, you either saw the kid in person at his school or in his house. Number two, you made a phone call from a landline, not a cell phone, from a landline, and, you know, hopefully you can get the kid sometimes. Sometimes you're good, sometimes you couldn't. Or you sat down and you hand-wrote that kid a card or a letter. Now, again, today, you know, those were the three ways we contacted kids back then. You know, there wasn't a lot of camps that you went to and would look at kids and grade those kids and evaluate them. There really wasn't all that you have today. Because now you can start going to camps in the eighth grade. I mean, you know, folks are getting, you know, offered coming out of the womb.
Yeah, you can go to camps now. And camps have changed shape a little bit. It used to be, and there's still some to do this. I'm not saying they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times camps used to be 2 or 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, and it was more developmental, building fundamentals. And if you saw a recruit in there, that was a good thing. Of course, mm-hmm. you tried to invite kids that you thought would be prospects for camps.
Right.
But now the camp is geared towards evaluation.
Right.
You know, purely evaluation. Do they still teach fundamentals and good techniques? Yes. Mm-hmm. My oldest son, who I went through this process with, yeah, it is, but it also involved, you know, evaluations.
Right.
You know, and now some of these guys use the camp as part of the measuring stick that, you know, the role has, or the procedure has changed a little bit. You would get a name, do your legwork, do your homework, try to get him in camp or try to go watch him play, then start getting that relationship built. Now they get the information, and some of these guys now are offering, but the offer is conditional on them coming to camp.
Right, right. Hey, you know, Carter, hang on.
Hold on that.
Hang on just a second. I'm up against a break. We're going to take just a quick break, and we'll be right back right here on Lunch Rush, right here on GameDaySportsRadio.com. Back on the Lunch Rush from Buffalo Wild Wings right here in Noonan, Georgia, right south of Atlanta, right south of the airport. Carter Cardwell, our guest on the Lunch Rush today, talking some college football recruiting. And Carter, before the break, we were talking about the camps and the gathering of information. And as we were discussing, you know, there are basically three ways that we could evaluate kids and have contact with kids. When you and I first got into the college coaching gig some 30-plus years ago, 35-plus years ago to be accurate, but, you know, who's counting? But
yeah,
now, yeah, you know, toward the latter part of our years, we did have cell phones, but every kid didn't have a cell phone. Adults had cell phones back then. Had some email, but no Twitter. No Instagram,
right.
No Facebook,
no.
Just
exactly.
Go ahead.
Exactly. The contact access now is, you know, there's so many different platforms now that they use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when all this started, I can remember a bunch of legislation, a bunch of rules about what you could and couldn't
mm-hmm.
do,
mm-hmm.
what sources you could and could not use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that has changed considerably. Like I said, there's so many different platforms they can use to communicate with and make contact with and to use to open those things up. I remember, And I heard an NFL guy say this, and I was talking, evaluating and finding players, because, you know, in the scouting department of the NFL, they're looking, you know, they're evaluating, they're doing their processes, and we talked about it, and I said, you know, it's funny, used to there were some guys that were really good at finding the hidden gems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At the guys sort of off the beaten path, and you could, you know, and you would keep those little, in fishing terms, you would keep that honey hole a secret.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. you'd say, hey, I know this school, they do a really good job. They're not on the, quote, beaten path. And you go in there and you find a good player. Mm-hmm. And my buddy in the NFL says, well, that doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
He said, there is no hidden gem. He says, we know where everybody is.
Yeah.
And he's right. Mm-hmm. And today in college athletics, you know, mm-hmm. they know where everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, they know where the people are. They know where they are because of all this access they can get to it. At least they may not know much about it, but they'll know, hey, there's that guy at that school.
Yeah.
And because used to, you could do that. And there were guys that were really good at finding those hidden gems mm-hmm. and tucked away in those little places. Or, you know, they used to say, you know, if you were brave enough to get off the interstate a few miles, you could mm-hmm. find some players.
That's right.
You know.
And I remember
now,
those.
Like I said, with this access, you have a better chance of finding those guys. But like I said, the old hidden gem thing sort of gone away. You know, they know where everybody is now. Everybody has access to all those things you were talking about, all the accounts, all the Twitters. The coaches can use it and say, hey, you need to come look at this guy. Where, like you said in the past, if the coach didn't get you from landline to landline, mm-hmm. you may not find them.
Right.
But like I said, you know, I think that's great. You know, some people say, oh, that's not so good. It's great. You know, it's just yeah. how you take what information you got and use it to help your program,
yep.
you know, find those players.
Yep. You know, Carter, I remember being at Cumberland's, being at Emory and Henry, being at Olivet up in Chicago. And if you had the right connections in we would call them sometimes the one-stoplight schools, high schools, where that's all that's in town, the one-stoplight. If you had good connections there, you know, college coaches were not flocking there, and you could actually be at a Division II school or a Division III school, and you could get a 1AA player from those schools because they were not finding, you know, they were not finding those kids. And it elevated the level of your program. And as you said now, you know, 99.9% of players that can play, they already know about them.
They know where they are.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it still goes back to the face-to-face, person-to-person relationship thing you have with the coach. Mm-hmm. And it's not if you were successful in getting a player from, you know, Coach Jones or Coach Smith High School, it's how you dealt with that coach also.
Yes, yes.
You know, because I would go in there, even if I didn't get the kids, nothing worked out, I would always try to follow up and say, okay, Coach Jones, I didn't get, you know, Bochy Wood. What could I have done different?
Right.
What
right.
did I do right? What did I do wrong? What was really, you know, what caused him to go somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I was going to offer, I would stick to my word.
Yeah.
But I would also be really clear to that coach and say, okay, coach, this offer's good for 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, we like him, but you also got to understand our part of it. If he holds us for 2 weeks, you know, my head mm-hmm. coach is going to say, hey, do we need another outside linebacker instead of that kid?
Right.
Or, you know, defensive end, whatever. And if you are clear with the coach and you're honest with the coach and you're direct with the coach in that regard, even if you're not going to offer,
mm-hmm.
you know, I went and told the coach, I said, we're not going to offer him.
Right.
You know, and he wasn't happy, but I said, coach, at least I'm telling you the truth. I'm not saying maybe.
Right, right.
So if you kept that relationship honest and direct, maybe next year.
Maybe next time.
You know, and maybe next time. Or, you know, for instance, when they started the transfer thing, which is mm-hmm. a whole new deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, used to, you played. If you transfer, you sat out a year, it didn't matter.
Right, right.
You know, then when you and I were still recruiting, the transfer down, as they call it.
Right.
You know, from one to one double A, and one double A down two. If they were eligible, they could transfer.
Right.
You know, that changed the whole thing too, because we'd be recruiting a kid, and he may get taken by the top level.
Yeah.
But if you still were good with the coach and still were good with the kid during the process, you might get him back one day.
Right.
You know, he might come back to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the thing you got to remember. If you're honest and you're straightforward with the coaches and the kids and the families, if something didn't work out at that particular school, maybe that's an option for them to go to, because, well, at least old Coach Cardwell was direct and honest with me.
Yeah.
You know, and straightforward with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and now with this transfer thing, you know, transfer portal. I talked to a coach the other day, and he was talking about all the names that went into that portal last year.
Yeah.
You know, that's changed this recruiting tremendously, because when you and I started in it, transferring wasn't part of the deal.
No, not at all.
And it became part of the deal. You know, it became part of the deal when they had to transfer, you know, from if you went down a level and you were eligible to do that. Now came the grad. Now we have the graduate transfer thing.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people, I've heard some people make some criticisms of that. But you know what? I think the thing they're forgetting is we're putting out college graduates.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a pretty good thing. You know, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and we had one when I was at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. He graduated from Duke, and he came and played his last year and went to grad school.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with a Duke graduate coming to our place, working on a graduate degree and playing his last year of football?
Yeah, I'm totally fine with the graduate transfer.
I'm really good with the graduate transfer.
Yeah. But now I'll tell you what I'm not.
This new thing's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Now I'll tell you what I'm not good with, Carter, is this, is that the arbitrary decision-making of the NCAA, which has always been in effect as far as violation, recruiting violations and probation and stuff like that. But now the arbitrary decision-making has filtered down into transfer because, if I get a waiver because of this, that, or the other, then I can play immediately without having to sit out a year. Justin Fields is the poster child for that right now, leaving Georgia, going to Ohio State, playing immediately. But yet, you know, the NCAA is going to pick and choose which players, you know, are going to get that waiver, and for whatever reason. I think there was a player from, I can't remember, one of the Carolina schools wanted to transfer to Virginia Tech because his mother was ill with cancer, and he was like 20 miles outside of the radius that the NCAA considered immediate transfer. That's a crock. I mean, in my opinion, that stuff like that right there is a crock.
That's going to be challenging.
Yes.
It's really challenging because there's a lot of different ways they can go with that. And like you said, it does change your recruiting, because in the past when you were dealing with kids, and I'm not putting thoughts in of what programs do, but you see them signing position players, knowing good and well, and you were like me and some other programs, you would stair step your positions, like, okay, we got this number of players that this year, this many juniors, this many sophomores, you know, because you were in the development business,
right?
You know, you're developing players and programs and things. So now you'll see them sign, and I'm not going to get into it because I'm, you know, not a big proponent of, you know, 3-4-star guys at the same spot in the same class.
Right. Let them fight it out because 3 of them are going to transfer anyway.
Let them fight for it. Somebody's going to transfer. Somebody's going to leave. It's going to work out for them. And now, you know, and that's fine too. You know what? It's their prerogative to sign whoever they want to at what and do it that way. And used to, with the no transfer, the limited transfer thing, you know, somebody just said, okay, this is what my role is going to be here.
Right.
And or they'd switch positions or they do this or that. Now with this transfer portal and graduate transfers, I'm okay with the graduate transfer thing, but they're talking about this one-time transfer rule.
Yes.
And like you said with the waivers, I talked to a college coach because I was going to do my homework for this phone call, and he said, Carter, that's going to turn it into everybody below the Power Five being in minor league football.
Right.
I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, what if, one of the Power Fives wants to sign some players, two or three at a position, and they can only take two this year, and then the third guy signs with a Conference USA school in the group mm-hmm. of five, and then next year transfers up.
Yep. Almost like
And I said, wow. And I said, is that going to happen? He said, Carter, it's going to happen. He said, and what's going to happen is the top group's going to take the next group down. That mm-hmm. group's going to take, and he's a FCS coach. He said, and they're going to take from me, and I'm going to take from Division II.
Right. You know, it's
so
almost like the old
cherry picking is going to take place because, like I said, then I understood what he said. He said, mm-hmm. we're almost going to be like their practice team for a year or two till yep. they have a number in their class, and they wanted to take him last time, but they couldn't because of their numbers. Now they can.
Yep.
And what's going to stop that?
And it's kind of like the old, back when we first got into it, if a kid couldn't qualify academically, you would place that kid at a junior college, knowing that as soon as he was eligible to come, you were going to go back and you were going to get that kid. And,
right.
And over 80% of the time, some kids and some schools ended up, not reconnecting. But about 80% of the time, Carter, if a Division I school sent a kid to a junior college and that coaching staff stayed intact and everything, that kid usually came back and re-signed and played.
Yeah, they used to call it placing them.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Majority of the time that arrangement was set up and everybody stuck to their word and everybody did their part, mm-hmm. and that happened.
Yeah.
But like I said, now this coach, like I said again, he's at FCS level, said that could be a really touchy yeah. thing. He said, because all of a sudden, like I said, now we're just, they're cherry picking.
Yeah.
Hey, and they're going to take from me, I'm going to take from you. And
yeah.
It's going to get challenging.
Yeah. Hey, just like in the minor league baseball is a great is a great analogy here. Major league
That's
pulls them up.
He just said, I've just turned into a minor league for the group of five, and he's the group of five getting ready to be the AAA for the big guys.
That's it. Okay, in our last.
He said, so that's going to be something that's going to be looked at. And, the other thing that's interesting is this early signing period.
Right.
People are still sort of trying to figure out how that works. All it did was move the calendar up.
Right, yeah.
It moved the calendar up, and it changed the calendar considerably. The time that they have to spend building that relationship is now hit the accelerator.
Yep.
Tremendously. Yeah. So it's like I said, it's ever-changing, but you know what? Everything changes.
Yep.
Nothing needs to stay the same. Things do get better. You do hit. Like I said, when they started all the different types of media, they went through rules, legislations back and forth, what's acceptable, what's not,
mm-hmm.
I remember an AD telling me one time in recruiting, if it costs you money or you're the first guy to try it, you probably need to look that up in the book.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it might be illegal.
Yeah.
He said, and if you're good at it, guess what? It might be illegal the next year.
Right. And go back to Nick Saban and the visiting with the recruits on Skype off the assistant's laptop computer. Same type deal. Oh, we've got to get a rule against this. We've got to stop this. All right, Carter, go ahead.
And like I said, now they're landing in helicopters too.
Exactly.
So it's great.
Yes.
It's great. And there's still nothing, though, that doesn't go back to the core of it. Being mm-hmm. a good evaluator, and trusting what you see in the kid's ability, mm-hmm. what you also see in the kid's character, mm-hmm. what also you see in the family. But, like I said, these kids with social media, I talked to a friend of mine who played for me at Maryville, whose son had a Division I offer and lost it because of his social media.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, there's a lot of other stuff, good and bad, and that's probably one of the I guess you could say it's a negative aspect, but in a way it's a good aspect because now those guys are monitoring those accounts
right.
for those recruits. And when my oldest son went through that, he got rid of his Facebook account.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Not that he was doing anything bad.
Right.
He was just saying, listen, if one of your buddies posts a picture on there and it's on yours.
And tags you.
It's part of the deal.
Yeah, that's it.
It's different. Yeah. You know, like I said, but it's good. Like I said, if you stay on top of the game like the best in the business do, it's still about watching them go face-to-face and show kids what their program's about and all the good things that all this, you know, in the end, they're trying to make a kid's life better.
Hey, Carter,
college-educated or getting him to the NFL.
Right. Have you got a few more minutes? Have you got just a few more minutes?
I got four more minutes before I have to teach history.
All right, real quick. Folks, if you're tuning in for Vegas Viewpoint with Mike Bernard, that's going to be up right after this. We're going to talk to Carter Cardwell about five more minutes real quick. Carter, we've talked about the recruiting aspect of it, and we've talked about the kids. But let me ask you this now. You know, talking about the transfer, you know, I look at this, all this filters down. When you and I first started out, a coach was going to stay with that team, and if a, you know, now coaches pick up and leave at the, if they get a job, they're gone. Forget bowl games, forget this, forget that, I'm gone. Don't you think that the recruiting aspect of all of this is really just filtered down and mirrored the behavior that the coaches have now? And I'm not knocking coaches, because I'll never forget this. Frank Beamer was, and this will tell you how long ago it is, Frank Beamer was making $250,000 a year as head coach at Virginia Tech. Alabama came after him, was going to offer him something like, you know, a $375,000 a year to be the head coach. And I remember asking you, I said, you know, what's the, I mean, why would you want to do that? What's the difference between $250,000 and $375,000? You know, and you very immediately answered me. You said $125,000 a year. And so that is the, you know, I mean, seriously, though, it is so money driven now. That, and these coaches have made these decisions, and financially I cannot blame them, but at the same time, you can't blame players for behavior that you exhibit yourself.
It's a lot of that is societal too. I mean, that's sort of the way a lot of things are now. I mean, a generation before us, you finished school or you finished high school, you got a job, and that was your job.
Right.
You know, now in the chosen profession you and I were in for a while, that was the nature of the job, is to move a little bit. But now there is. There's a little bit more movement. There's a little bit more shifting here and there. Again, we can't fault any of our people that are still in this business to make as much as they can make, because you and I also know you may not be in it long.
That's, you know.
Yeah, it makes it tough. It does make it, though, difficult because of, like you said, the transitions. It does. The transitions now are, this sounds funny, but it's true, transitions are normal now.
No doubt.
You know, used to, the transition was sort of the exception to the rule. Now transitions are part of the deal.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, some of that stuff gets tied to coaching staff. Some of it does not. And, you know, like I said, it's all part of the change. It's all part of the way it has become. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, you know, you either fight it or embrace it and move on. So, you know, like I said, is it disappointing sometimes? Yeah, a little bit. But, again, I still go back to, there's still people out there in recruiting that are outworking others. And I'm not meaning from a legal or illegal standpoint, or, you know, within the rules or out of the rules. There's still great, great, great recruiters out there that have a good eye for talent and know how to, you know, as we used to call it, close the deal.
Yep. Carter.
Get them there. There's still some great ones out there.
It's been great visiting with you. We appreciate the time. Come back and visit with us soon.
Boji, loved it. Loved talking about it. Like I said, sort of keep my hand and my eye in it. And anytime you want to talk more about it, love to talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. And Mike Bernard is going to be from, I think, Mirage today out in Las Vegas with the Vegas Viewpoint. And we'll do that on Game Day, sportsradio.com after this break.